I will try and capture in the 15 minutes a history and culture around seeds in India, which goes to 10,000 years. So really, the currency that we're talking about is seeds. And seeds not as money, but as seeds as a culture themselves, as a currency themselves, because we still have 60 to 70% of communities in India whose lives, whose livelihoods, whose cultures depend on seeds themselves. And seeds are then the basis of exchange and the basis for relationships, not only between your living world, but relationships amongst people themselves. So, in that kind of setting, it's not cash or money or dollars or euros or francs which is the currency, it is the currency of seeds. And when we situate that and juxtapose that kind of worldview with free trade and international trade rules, whether that's through a multilateral system like the World Trade Organization or through bilateral trade and investment agreements, then there is an obvious contradiction of two worldviews. And even the language is misleading. I hear a lot about, the alternatives being spoken, and I'm hoping that in the last session of this event, we can even go back and revisit some of our language. And so I would propose that when we talk about free trade, we not simply talk about it as a freedom from government interference, which corporations would like, but in terms of a new kind of freedom for communities, a community sovereignty, which a lot of the seed savers themselves talk about. It goes to the heart of also the self-determination of indigenous peoples, as well as the choice of ordinary peoples like you and me to decide what kind of food we want to eat, what kind of farming we want to support. So a different kind of freedom then, instead of free trade. And we have, quite typically in India as well, the public and private sector in a new kind of partnership. So you have PPPs, which is the public-private partnerships, and the public sector, which is first an ally of local communities and seed savers, is now siding with the right side, which is really the wrong part. And you have a private sector, which is increasingly becoming a more active player in the food and farm sector. And we see intellectual property rules, even before the World Trade Organization's TRIPS agreement on intellectual property, but also TRIPS plus bilateral treaties that have emerged in India over the last 30, 40 years, even before WTO. And then we also see, apart from the standard setting on intellectual property, we see a new rush and push for enforcement through either international or plurilateral agreements like the ACTA, the ACTA, the Anti-Counterfeiting Trade Agreement, and contractual agreements between private companies and seed savers and farmers at the local level. So you have these IPR rules on seeds, which not only affect the access to the raw material or the genetic matter which goes into making new varieties of seeds, but also new restrictions on the finished goods, which means the so-called new plant varieties that are developed from farm-saved seeds. When those are marketed, then you have new kind of restrictions and controls on freedoms of farmers. You also have post-sales restrictions being imposed through other kinds of intellectual property, and I'll quickly touch through some of the main changes in law and policy in India on intellectual property. In 1999, even though the World Trade talks at the WTO collapsed, we started making amendments to our patent legislation to be in line with the WTO TRIPS. In 2001, India, for the first time, legislated on plant variety protection on seeds. And more recently, to try and bring in a culture of intellectual property rights within the scientific community, in the agricultural research institutes and the public sector, there is a proposed legislation which is patterned on the U.S. Law, which is a protection and utilization of public-funded intellectual property bill, which means all the genetic material which is saved in public trust and national gene banks, if that is used to develop new seed varieties, then the scientific community and the formal breeders would then get some kind of IP protection under this law. But even before we see the new generation of free trade agreements which are being negotiated by the government of India, there has been a first generation of bilateral agreements in 1991. Now, 1991 is an important year in India's history because that's the time the economic reform programs were announced by the central government, which meant that India would open up its economy to try and bring it in line with world trade. And you have the globalization, liberalization, privatization agenda started off in 1991. And as part of that so-called economic, quote-unquote, reform program, a model bilateral investment protection and promotion agreement, a template, was designed. And in that first generation, more than 80-plus bilateral investment protection and promotion agreements were signed. But 2005 onwards, with the first free trade agreement that India signed with Singapore, we see a second generation of free trade agreements that are being negotiated. And the kind of investor protection that these agreements give also include intellectual property, which means the agreements will not only protect the investors' access and priority access to land and water and all the basic inputs that you need for seed growing and for farming, but also on intellectual property rights. So intellectual property is very much part of the definition of investment in these bilateral agreements. So just a quick list of what are the main agreements that India is currently negotiating with different so-called developed countries. Next week, Stephen Harper, the Prime Minister of Canada, is coming to India with a trade delegation to start free trade agreement negotiations with the Indian side and the Indian industry. We also have a European Union-India bilateral trade and investment agreement, which for the last couple of years it's been going slow, but it also has very strong IP demands on India. We also have, you know, what might be of particular interest to a Swiss audience is an EFTA, proposed trade and investment agreement between the four EFTA countries, which includes Switzerland as well as India. And also we are at a very early stages with going forward on a bilateral investment treaty with the United States administration. So what are the concerns then? It's not only about the kind of politics that these trade agreements bring and penetrate into a society which I spoke about earlier revolves around seed cultures and informal innovation, but it's also the process, the fact that many of these agreements, the texts are not made public, despite there being several rounds of talks. In the context of the Indian-Swiss economic relations, let's go back to 1997, which was when the first generation bilateral agreement was signed between the Swiss government and India. This was a one-on-one agreement. It had broad terms, but it started getting more concentrated and focused on a trade and investment agreement when a joint study group between the two sides was officially set up. And it recommended that such a new generation of free trade agreement should be negotiated between the two sides. But along the same time, we also signed a memorandum of understanding. So what I'm trying to do is locate this specific free trade agreement negotiations with other agreements that are also being signed on the side or being negotiated. And so it's this particular free trade agreement is part of a larger landscape where several other agreements and cooperation agreements are being signed and negotiated between both sides. So on the issue of intellectual property, the Indian Ministry of Commerce and Industry and the Federal Department of Economic Affairs of Switzerland signed an MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding, on the specific issue of intellectual property. And we have several players apart from the government trade negotiators. We have a very active Swiss-India Commerce and Industry body, the SICC, and a lot of these kind of push and act as lobbying and advocacy groups to the official trade negotiators. You see here in this picture the Swiss ambassador with the head of the SICC. Now to zoom in into the issue of the seed industry in India. Apart from the 1991 economic reform programs which I mentioned, which opened up also the seed sector to foreign investment and gave a much larger role and space for the private sector to operate in the agriculture sector, given that there are increasing government subsidies in that sector, and you have companies, Swiss companies, multinational companies like Syngenta, which get the benefit of a lot of these government subsidies, particularly in the context of the second green revolution, which is being launched in India, and a lot of stress on high yield, with a very limited definition of yield being the amount of crop produce that you can harvest and harness from the ground, irrespective of what kind of implications it has at a biological level, at an ecological level, and at a social level. There's also much more increased foreign direct investment, FDI policies, which favor the private seed industry to operate. And given all this, given this landscape, the Indian seed industry is expected to grow 50%, which means in the next 2 years it will almost double. So how do you situate this whole discussion on the bilateral trade treaties, which bring in IPR, with already existing international commitments to protect farmers' rights? There is negotiated international plant treaty under the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, which puts responsibilities on national governments to realize farmers' rights, but it makes that subject to national legislation. And what we find is, with the seed industry being able to influence the national legislations, whether that's plant variety protection or even biodiversity conservation legislation, or even pushing for seed legislation and pro-biotechnology development laws in a national setting, because of the sheer size and volume and the kind of economic and political clout that a lot of these industries and corporations have, they are able to influence what kind of national legislation will emerge. And so there is a very vibrant debate in India about whether even the Protection of Plant Varieties Act, even though it has a so-called farmers' chapter, whether it really safeguards farmers' rights. And you have the EFTA-India bilateral agreement, proposed agreement, and this is a leaked text which we got, the IP chapter, which was leaked in 2009, which clearly talks about a commitment on both sides to provide for a kind of IPR, protection of plant varieties, on new plant varieties. Likewise, even the 27 countries together under the European Union wanted India in its free trade agreements negotiations with the EU to also provide for IP, whether that is through the WTO TRIPS standards or patenting of microorganisms, and as well as UPOV compliance. But we also have, apart from the bilateral negotiations, there's, you know, what needs to be put into focus is the kind of conduct by the Swiss corporations in India itself, which have been able to influence not only the patent offices, but also get some favorable judgments for the patenting of life forms in India. What I mentioned here on the screen is a particular case which was fought by a Swiss company, Diminaco AG, which got a patent for a living vaccine. We have to see conduct of companies and how they're aspiring to get IP protection within the existing national laws. And this is another case of Syngenta India Limited, which is currently sought plant variety protection for a new variety of rice. And it needs to be mentioned here that India is seen as a country of origin for rice diversity. In the International Rice Research Institute in the Philippines, which is a CGIAR center, India is one of the largest donor of rice germplasm. So there is a question asked by local communities on whether we really need new varieties of rice, particularly those which are IPR protected by foreign companies. So you have law and policy tilting towards IP protection for these companies. And likewise, even for other what are called coarse grains and crops of the poor, even with pearl millet, because that is something, again, the CGIAR centers like ICRISAT in Hyderabad in South India talk about as being smart crops, which you can use both in the context of climate change for fuel as well as for food. These are also being IP protected. I mean, Syngenta India has sought for plant variety protection for those and has been granted that in January this year. So you have a Plant Variety Protection Act in India, which was supposedly to provide for grassroots innovation, but it gives exclusive economic rights to plant breeders, and only formal plant breeders are being able to get this kind of protection. And the effect of the Plant Variety Protection Law on farmers is that while in the language of the law, it allows them to save and use and exchange and share and sow and resow a lot of their own seeds. But if they use a PVP-protected seed, an IPR-protected seed, for instance, Syngenta's PVP-protected rice, then a couple of things there. One is that these are hybrid varieties. So the saving, using, and exchanging these seeds for getting the kind of yield in the subsequent generation completely dies out. That possibility is no longer there because, as you're aware, with hybrid seeds, the vigor and the yield capacity goes down with subsequent generations. So, and on the other hand, you have genetically modified rice also being tested in India. This is a BT variety of rice, BT basmati, as well as golden rice, in which, again, Swiss scientists as well as Swiss companies are involved in the development. So you have the IPR itself being a trap for farmers in their own country, and lobbying and advocacy being done by industry associations apart from SICC, the European Crop Protection Association, which also wants IP rights to be one of the issues on top of the agenda because it sees India and China, particularly in Asia, as the large export markets. And if you look at even the response of the European Crop Protection Association and the DG Trade Civil Society Dialogue, they ask for politicians to push for laws for the protection of patents and plant protection provisions in domestic spaces like in India. I will not get into the details, but flag this case for you also, which is another instance where Swiss multinational company has been seeking data exclusivity, another side of how intellectual property rights are imposed on insecticide and pesticides. But the good news is that there are several campaigns for freeing seeds and a new revitalization of local varieties and on-farm in-situ conservation of seeds that are being done in different local spaces in India, and that's where the hope lies.